Welcome to Hype episode 151. My name is Selena. I'm here with Pam for another week of exciting entertainment and pop culture news stories. Yay! We're on the other side of 150.
Finally.
Still going strong.
Whole new decade, whole new us.
I know. Whole new world.
50 flirty and thriving.
Yeah. Did you like that title?
I did. It was perfect. If you hadn't gone with that, I would have just been like, what was our conversation on rom-coms all four?
I know, exactly. So we are, how do I usually do this? We're going to get into all the latest entertainment news stories in a second. But as always, we just want to remind you of the contact information if you want to let us know what you thought about what we talked about this week, as a couple of people have done at length in our listener feedback section this week. And that's going to be exciting to get to. You can do that by emailing hype@hypeable.com. You can leave a comment on Hypeable, which is hypeable.com, on the 151 podcast post. You can tweet us at Hypeable Hype. You can find us on Tumblr at hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can find us on Instagram, which is Hypeable Hype on Instagram. You can also come be a Patreon on Patreon, which is patreon.com/hypepodcast, where we, if you subscribe and you to any of the levels, you get a bonus discussion every week. This week, it's going to be about the Batgirl rumored shortlist. We're going to take a closer look at some of the people who are on this alleged shortlist and going to come up with some suggestions of our own for what we think would be a better shortlist. We are also releasing weekly videos and we do a lot of fun stuff over there. So check it out on patreon.com/hypepodcast. So moving into how we hype, where we tell you what we've been doing in fandom this past week. Pam, what have you been doing?
Oh, I had to go see Baby Driver. I was so excited for this movie to come out because it's been getting a lot of buzz. Everybody know that had seen it at the various different festivals it had been playing at had said, oh my gosh, it's so good. You're going to love it. And like, they were right. You know, my friends know me well. I think that if you want to be nitpicky, you're going to see a lot of like people talking about like, you know, whether or not there was any character development, whether or not the story was sloppy. And these are like concerns that are valid. I could see that. But just as a movie that was enjoyable purely for the cinematography and the pacing and the use of music, like this was up my alley. It's a great time at the movies. I give it 2 thumbs up. And yeah, I really, really enjoyed this a lot. I feel like the soundtrack is not necessarily like that is probably getting a little bit more hype than it deserves. I don't think I'm going to be reaching for the soundtrack as much as I was reaching for something like La La Land soundtrack or even like the first Guardians of the Galaxy. But I think that as a tool and as a story, like a storytelling tool, the music works really well in the confines of the film. And it's just, yeah, it's just, I loved this movie so much. I really, really enjoyed it.
Cool. I'm glad to hear it. I mean, I knew you would be checking it out and loving it because of the soundtrack, but it's sad that it didn't live up to expectations, but I'm glad you liked the movie otherwise.
It's just funny because like, it's like the songs were good and I really enjoyed the way that they were used in the film, but it's just not like it's so funny because I didn't feel the need to go out and like pick the soundtrack up or stream it or anything like that. But maybe if I go see the movie a second time, I'll feel differently. But yeah, like within the confines of the movie, it was great, but it's just not like a soundtrack that I feel like I would want to play over and over and over again.
Yeah. I still have so many movies to see. I think I've only really seen Wonder Woman this year. I don't remember seeing other ones. I still have to take my brother to see Baywatch. And with Spider-Man coming out too, like it's heating up movie season. Oh, I guess I saw Guardians. I've seen a couple of movies, but...
And you saw XXX, The Return of Xander Cage.
That's true. I did see that one, my favorite movie.
I haven't seen that yet, but I know that you were very impressed.
I like that movie. I thought it was so
that's
much fun.
Good. It's on my list.
Yeah, I haven't really done much since the last time we hyped, but I guess I did just, this is a really dumb backwards plug, but I've been binging Pottercast podcasts this past couple of days because I've been biking and stuff, and I was out of Gilmore Guys to listen to. So I was listening to Podcast, which is I've listened to that like along with MuggleCast since I was like, well, I didn't come into MuggleCast until like right before the seventh book. I was a Podcast listener. Listeners know this story, I'm sure, or else they do now. So I've always loved that podcast, and I didn't even realize they were still doing episodes, but apparently they are, and they're really good. And they Melissa and John and Frack are still on them, and they were joined by Zach from Game of Owns, who I've obviously podcasted with in the past, and I had no idea. So I was just listening to that, like, who is that voice? Like, who is this? What? And then I was like, oh my god! So that was fun. And yeah, they're going through the Harry Potter books again, and I like it, and I'm listening to it, and I just wanted to give a little PSA to any other fellow Pottercast listeners, because MuggleCast is doing shows. Like, they've consistently been doing shows, and I'm sure you all know that because of Andrew and stuff, but
yeah,
Melissa's still at it too.
I have this thing where, like, it's kind of hard for me to listen to shows that my friends are on, mostly because I listen to podcasts when I'm, like, running or doing errands or things like that. So I have a tendency to forget that I'm not speaking to people I know.
Yeah.
And I will start speaking out loud, and it just makes for really awkward situations. So I try not to do that. But I did listen to their interview with Ivana Lynch. They finally got Ivana on the show, which is really adorable because she started off as a fan of Harry Potter. She was a fan of their show, fan of Pottercast.
MuggleCast? So,
She was talking about how she was like a really big fan of MuggleCast, and that she was like really excited in like the first initial press interview she did for Order of the Phoenix because Andrew was there asking her questions. So anyway, like the interview, I'm sure like all of you guys have already like listened because we have a lot of crossover of course, between like you guys and those of you that listen to MuggleCast. But if it's still in your queue, it's worth a listen. It's adorable. And it was a really nice way to kick off the 20th anniversary of Harry Potter. I like took a nice run in the morning and I listened to that. And it was just really great. It was lovely.
Hmm. So now that we've told you what other podcasts to listen to, if you're still here, we do have some news to get through, and we're going to actually keep it in the Harry Potter lane, so don't turn us off. We're also relevant. We're going to talk a little bit about Fantastic Beasts, the sequel, Fantastic Beasts-quel? I don't know, there's something in there, which has officially begun filming in Leavesden. So we're back on the Harry Potter lot and the studio, and some plot details and character details for the sequel have been revealed by Pottermore along with this filming announcement. Pottermore has revealed something interesting about the scope of the film, saying that it will take place in Paris, London, and New York. So we're going to be, whether the New York scenes are just kind of a way to tie up that part of the story, or whether we'll see characters like Tina or Queenie or Jacob or anyone like that still in New York while Newt is in Paris, sort of remains to be seen. But it's interesting also that we will be going to London, because that is, of course, like where Harry Potter, like that's where the main, not in London, but in Britain is where the main story is set. So it's nice to know that we will be going back there, presumably for some Dumbledore scenes, one can hope, perchance. And we have some new characters, including a bounty hunter called Grimson, played by Icelandic actor Ingvar Sigurdsson. I like how Icelandic actors are in everything now. It's like Hollywood has discovered Iceland and they're just bringing it. Anyway, that's funny to me. William Nadilam will be playing a wizard called Yusuf Kama. Olafur Dari Olafsson, who I'm guessing is also Icelandic, will be playing Skender, who's the owner of a wizarding circus, and Claudia Kim will be one of the circus's featured attractions. I believe Claudia Kim was also in Avengers Age of Ultron. Along with this as well comes a synopsis which reads, I will just read it for you. As he promised he would, Grindelwald has made a dramatic escape and has been gathering more followers to his cause, elevating wizards above all non-magical beings. The only one who might be able to stop him is the wizard he once called his dearest friend, Albus Dumbledore. But Dumbledore will need help from the wizard who had thwarted Grindelwald once before, his former student, Newt Scamander. The adventure reunites Newt with Tina, Queenie, and Jacob, but his mission will also test their loyalties as they face new perils in an increasingly dangerous and divided wizarding world. So, like, Pam, I don't know about you, but I'm actually beginning to get a little excited about this. Like, I'm warming up to the Fantastic Beasts franchise, and maybe Dumbledore and Jude Law has a little bit to do with that, but I'm just like, I'm excited.
Well, honestly, you know, I think the biggest thing that the synopsis offers is a sigh of relief, because for a while
Jacob is still in it.
Well, yeah, but like there was that whole interview that came out with like David Yates, who, you know, should know his stuff. Like, he's not out of the loop by any means in what's going on with Fantastic Beasts. And he said, oh yeah, like Newt might not actually be the main character in this story. And so everybody kind of thought, well, like, you know, like we're probably gonna like lose him somewhere down the line, where when we get into the life and lies of Albus Dumbledore, which was apparently the real story. But it's kind of nice to know that he is clearly going to have a role to play. I think it's smart of them to do that. It would have been understandable if they had decided to write out these new characters, just because they know they can make money off of characters that are established, that the fandom already like knows about. It's not like they're bringing in a whole new slew of characters we need to be introduced to. A lot of that's going to be overlapped with people that we already know. But it is nice to know that we're not going to lose our new, you know, trio, so to speak, because they were so much fun in the first movie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I think this is sort of very akin to Harry Potter in the way that if the movies, which I know, you know, again, as someone who's not a huge fan of the movies, this is like, yeah, whatever. But I know a lot of people who watched the movies had hoped that we would be spending a little more time with the adult characters. So like, probably also because of the huge actors they got for those parts. But I know a lot of people were like, well, those movies would have been a lot better if there had been like more Snape and more Dumbledore and more McGonagall and whatever. And I think like what this movie is shaping up to be is, it's not that it's not a story about Newt, but it is kind of like a Harry Potter movie where we would have spent a little more time in the world surrounding Harry. So if Newt is our Harry in this story, he's still the main character, and Dumbledore still needs him to defeat, in this case, Grindelwald, in Harry Potter's case, Voldemort. But it's also about Dumbledore, and it's also about his relationship. So it's kind of like, you know, when we got that scene in Half-Blood Prince where Dumbledore was going back, not back in time, but it was a flashback, and we got to see him interact with Tom Riddle, and we got a little bit more depth to that relationship. And it kind of feels like this is the story that we're getting. It is a little bit more of an ensemble, and it is paying homage to all of the characters' sort of interconnectedness, but it's still Newt's story, and it's still a story about him and his friends and how they emotionally deal with this apparent divide. I still don't understand why it's a divide. Grindelwald seems so clearly evil to me, but maybe it'll be complicated in the sequel. I don't know.
I'm kind of wondering if it goes back to like just morals, because when we go to New York of the 20s with Newt in Fantastic Beasts, it's very hard for Tina to kind of understand why Newt wants to canoodle with muggles, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah. I kind of wonder if it's going to be kind of one of those things where it's like, I don't know, it's just some kind of moral aspect that's going to come into play.
They're going to be in Paris, and they're going to be like, Americans, you need to care about the rest of the world.
And they're going to be like, what? This is not hurting us. This has nothing to do with Ilvermorny or Makuza, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And then they're going to be like, oh, now this is worldwide. Now we must join the fight.
Very World War II American. And then they make an agreement in Paris.
Yeah, exactly. They swoop in and save the day and take all the glory. I say they, I am American. This is
Those ones.
The other ones.
Yeah. But no, it's going to be fine. I mean, I'm sure that J.K. Rowling is not going to be able to resist making some kind of Americans, remember that you are like a part of all of us kind of statements in this movie. And that's good. I'm excited for that. So let's see. Credence is also coming back, Ezra Miller, in a quote unquote mysterious way, which is great because like he kind of died in the last one, but maybe he didn't. Maybe he did. I don't know. We will see.
But also, Ezra Miller is such a good actor in general that it would behoove them to bring him back in some capacity. It mm-hmm. would have been too short.
It's true. It's very true. And he was the one who was most... He was this movie's Ivana Lynch because he was so excited to be there. So I'm just glad for him that he's coming back. Another piece of Fantastic Beasts news is that part of this story is apparently going to take place in a wizarding circus. Some of the characters announced were obviously involved in this wizarding circus. And on Hypeable, we have a little bit of art for it from Mina Lima, which was apparently... it's on sale in Mina Lima online store, and it shows a woman wrapped in a serpent. So yeah, I mean, I guess it'll just be interesting to see how this plays into it. I'm a little bit less enthused about this just because it's giving me like major war flashbacks to that Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. I'm like, I really hope that they don't go down that route. You know, because obviously people with magic, I mean, this is a magical circus, so I'm imagining that those people are there by choice. But if it's like a thing of them having to like liberate a magical person from a circus, I'm just, we've seen that story before.
But also like on an emotional like level that always breaks my heart. Like I was watching that Victor Frankenstein movie with mm-hmm. Dan Radcliffe in it. See, it all ties back to Harry Potter, you guys, I promise. And like in the beginning... Frankenstein saves Igor from this awful life in the circus, and like stuff like that always like just really bothers me, like in general, because it's just so sad mm-hmm. and like whether it's like man or beast that's locked up in a circus, it's just like it's awful. It's like basically slavery, and yeah, so mm-hmm. purely for selfish reasons, I would like to not experience that, but.
Yeah,
you're right. Just because like it is like if it's like a magical circus, it's possible that they're just swindling muggles or nomads out of money, you know, because they're
exactly.
Like, oh, look,
it just seems like
a fable, but really we're doing it for real. How do we do
yeah.
it? Magic.
It's just one of those things that I feel like is such a go-to for this era of time and for this story. And like I get why she's sort of attracted to. Because a circus can be like a very visually stunning thing, so it makes sense. But it just is one of those cliches of the era of those kinds of movies that I'm just like, no, you know, I don't know. Anyway, I'm sure it'll be great. I'm still excited.
Well, keeping on with the Harry Potter train, J.K. Rowling is about to give a huge interview. She's actually set to sit down with Christiane Amanpour of CNN to talk about the 20th anniversary of Harry Potter, as well as her charity Lumos. The interview is actually set to premiere, I guess that's the right word for it. It's set to air on Monday, this coming Monday at 8 p.m. And Christiane Amanpour took to Twitter and she showed off this little teaser for the interview. And in it, she says, oh, like, this is a J.K. Rowling scoop. And she also hints that Joe might have a surprise in store for fans. So, of course, everybody's kind of speculating what this could be. It should be pointed out as well that this doesn't necessarily have like, it's possible it's not even about Harry Potter at all, but of course, like, our brains are one-track-minded, so it's going to be interesting to see what this surprise is and whether or not it's actually, like, a surprise worth getting excited over, if it's just something that's been stuck into this teaser to entice people to watch, but, like, we would all watch anyway, so, you know. Mm-hmm. Do you have any theories as to what this could be? I've been having fun on the Hypeable Twitter reading what people think this might mean. A couple of people are saying, like, maybe Marauders prequel, but I feel like that would make me sad.
No.
Really sad.
If it's anything below an encyclopedia, I'm going to be disappointed. Let's be real. Okay, like, that's the one thing I'm waiting for her to do. You know, like, it's...
I want to wait with you, but I feel like waiting is just going to, like leave me with more disappointment.
I mean, because I'm convinced
it's like never gonna happen.
But I was thinking about this actually, how I still want an encyclopedia, and I'm kind of like with Andrew. I think he released a Hypable article going like, it's been a million years and it still hasn't come out yet. Like, what's the deal? And I want to believe that it's coming, and I want to believe that Pottermore isn't the stand-in for the encyclopedia I want. But I think that one of two things would happen with that encyclopedia. Either she would release it, but like in the short book format. So kind of like not exactly like Quidditch Through the Ages and Fantastic Beasts, but like a little bit bigger, but definitely like a tie-in promo book as opposed to like the huge tome that we're all expecting. Or she will wait to release it until after Fantastic Beasts, because now she has a whole new canon of books out. Like, if she releases an encyclopedia now, she might get around it by like having it be about older time. But I have a feeling that there's so much now that she wants to keep hidden, that either if she releases an encyclopedia now, it's going to be like incomplete or like vague, because she has to keep it vague because there are secrets in there that would reveal what happens in Fantastic Beasts, or she's not going to release it until those movies are all done in like 50 years. So I'm like, I don't think it's going to be that. It's just always my go-to prediction. To be honest with you, I think my true prediction is that it's going to be something, going to be some kind of new charity initiative, maybe an auction.
I just assumed that it wasn't going to be Harry Potter specific at all, and maybe something more around like the Cormoran Strike novels. Because it would mm-hmm. still be a J.K. Rowling exclusive, yeah, but maybe yeah. not. But then again, like, the whole interview is pegged around Harry Potter. Not that she can't talk about her other projects, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't... Christian Amanpour, Rory Gilmore would be so sad. she doesn't say the surprise is for Harry Potter. She just says it's a surprise for her fans. And I don't think... When she says it's a surprise, I don't think... it's something big. Like, I have a feeling it's going to be something like, because it is an interview for Lumos. So it's probably going to be like an auction to raise money, or it's going to be some new initiative for fans to get involved with, which is going to be great. Like, I'm not dissing that at all. I just think people are going to get their hopes up for something and then they're going to be disappointed. It's kind of like when the Star Wars surprise. Do you remember that earlier this year? And people were like super excited. And then all they did was announce the new Force for Change drive. And was a really good thing. Yeah. But everyone was just so disappointed because they were expecting something about The Last Jedi.
Yeah, because you think you build it up in your head, like, what are we going to get? And then all you get is like the title card for the new movie.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's like, here's the font that we altered, like a minimal tiny bit. Don't you see we added more rust to the letters, you guys? Because yeah. it's darker.
Yeah. That's what it is. But yeah, I guess maybe when is this coming out, right? It's
this coming Monday.
Okay, so this podcast will probably be out by the time you hear this.
Yeah, we can unravel the interview next week.
Yeah.
Take a deep dive.
All right, so moving on, we have from Harry Potter to Aragog to spiders to Spider-Man. I don't know. Spider-Man is a magical creature, isn't he? So Spider-Man the movie is just on the cusp of release. I guess some people will definitely have seen it by the time this comes out. Neither me or Pam have, so don't worry, no spoilers. But the first 4 minutes have been released online. And my initial thought watching these first 4 minutes is that that's a pretty interesting way to start the movie. Basically what happens, and we could discuss it a little bit, is it's camera phone footage of Peter Parker basically picking up on his introduction in Captain America Civil War, where he goes to help Iron Man fight some of the other Avengers, and we see him sort of going there with Happy, and we see him getting the suit, and we see him sort of going like, oh my god, as he is, he's fighting the other Avengers, and then sort of it goes into the real movie when Iron Man drops him off at home, and I'm guessing that the movie is going to pick up directly from there. So it's going to, like, technically pick up right after Spider-Man took part in the fight in Civil War. Obviously, the main draw of this is Peter Parker and his affable charm and whatever you want to call it. Did you watch it? What did you think? Let's talk about it.
Yeah, I thought it was really cute. I think, you know, honestly, I kind of liked that it was this, because if they were going to release the first 4 minutes, I'm glad it was kind of footage that we've already almost seen, you know, just from like a different angle, because it's still kind of a fun promo that you can watch without feeling like you're spoiling yourself too much with regards to what you're going to see in the theaters. And I know that even though this movie's like super long, that's something that means a lot to a lot of people, you know, not getting too mm-hmm. much promotional footage from the actual film. So it's kind of like a fun way to intro it. And one of the things that I really liked actually was that they showed him getting the new suit with the upgrades. And I know for like hardcore Spider-Man fans, it's kind of like a little bittersweet that he's got this new suit from Tony with all these gadgets, because a lot of the charm of the original Spider-Man comics, like cartoons, what have you, is that Peter made his own suit. And so sometimes the gag would be that he would try out this new technology because he's super smart, and then it would backfire on him. And it's kind of like that slapstick type comedy moment. Yeah. And so a little bit of that charm is taken away when you've got this polished Spidey suit from Tony, but it's kind of nice to see, like, you know, what he's come up with on his own too.
You know, it's kind of funny how like that kind of becomes a bit of a metaphor for Spider-Man's sort of quote-unquote insertion into the MCU, where it's all like, it all feels a little too easy, you know, it all feels a little bit too smooth, where it's like, oh, look, he's there. He's just part of the team. We're just going to make a movie about him. Haha, look how funny he is. Like, there's something about it that's just a little bit too sleek for me. And I think that's part of the reason why I'm not super enthused about it.
Interesting. Yeah, I think that, like, I am excited to watch this movie. The initial reactions for the press previews, they came out last week, and everybody is really enjoying it. They're like, this is the Spider-Man movie we've always wanted. Like, arguably, it's not the Spider-Man movie we needed, because we've seen Peter Parker so many times. But it's nice to hear that it's a good time at the movies. And
it is nice. Yeah. I think that's like, that's it. It's that this is going to satisfy people. You know, this is a Spider-Man movie that needs to exist as much as, you know, we might have enjoyed the other
also
ones.
I'm really excited for Zendaya.
Yeah,
like, I love
too.
Her and
me
I'm
too.
So excited to see her. Like, I'm kind of more excited for the secondary characters, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. I think there's not like there it's I don't mean to like neg on it or anything, because I'm sure that this is gonna be a really good experience for people who are excited for this film. I think there's just something, you know, you have that every once in a while where you just, you know exactly what the movie is going to be before you even go see it.
Look,
like, you know how this is.
I will be happy if we don't have to watch Uncle Ben die again.
That's like, well, I don't think he's even in it, so I think we've dodged that.
So we've dodged. It's just kind of like when you see the Waynes die before every reincarnation of Batman. It's like, I don't need to see Bruce become an orphan again.
Yeah, and I think my brother wants to go see it, so I probably will end up going to see it. But like I think I said on Twitter too, is that I have no emotion. I'm just like, it's a Spider-Man story again, and like, he's gonna be an event. Yeah, he's excited. I have that like, but where's the, what am I getting that I don't already know I'm getting? You know, it's just, it's right there on screen. And I think Tom Holland is great, but he's also just an excited little boy. Like, that's it. You know? And I'm like, okay, I get it. I've seen the promo. I know what you are.
Right.
I know what you are. So, I mean, yeah. And they're like, I also have a really like squick about when people incorporate like YouTube and stuff into movies.
Oh, really?
I'm like, oh my God.
I'm a little like, sometimes I find it endearing, and then other times I feel like it didn't need to exist, but I don't know. It just depends
but anyway,
on the situation.
But I'm sure I'll enjoy. It's just, it's kind of like Ant-Man, where I had no emotion about it. I was just like, okay, I get it. You know, another superhero movie. What's like, whatever. So yeah, but exciting times. And we will probably have both have seen it next week when we record. I can't promise that, but maybe we will.
Well, I'll so have we seen it. I'm going on Friday, so we'll at least Spider-Pam. we'll at least have a Howie hype review from me if nobody else has seen it. So yeah, should be fun. Well, here's something that we both might be able to get excited about. Will and Grace is coming back to television this fall. I hope you were a Will and Grace fan back in the day. I feel like you must have been.
Yeah, I was.
Everybody,
of course.
Yeah, everybody loves Will and Grace. And like, it's just like there's something about this cast. Like, anytime you see them together, you just can't help but smile. Mm. So if you want to do a little bit more smiling, NBC revealed a brand new promo for the upcoming 9th season of the series on the 4th of July. And it's just this like short little promo. It's super fun. Doesn't really give anything away with regards to what we're going to see when they actually get into the plot of the 12 new episodes, but it does feature the whole cast kind of having a little fun and strutting their stuff to James Brown's I Got the Feeling, and then right at the end in bold white font it says they're back. So it's just like a fun little promo to get you excited. The series, we'll still have to wait a little while for episodes to start airing on NBC, but the show is set to return on Thursday, September 28th at 9 p.m. So it should be fun.
Should be fun. They still got it. I mean, revivals are like a mixed bag, so you never know what to expect. But I think I have a pretty good feeling about this one.
Me too.
Yeah, so moving on to another news story now. Over this past week, we've been following the story about the Hawaii Five-O actually lost basically half its cast because Daniel Dae Kim and Grace Park, the show's two Asian cast members, have left the show following a contract dispute with CBS. So basically, Hawaii Five-O is the sort of reboot of the 80s cop procedural drama. It's set on Hawaii. It stars Alex O'Loughlin and Scott Kahn, and as along with Daniel Dae Kim and Grace Park. I have to admit, like before the story, and we'll get into what the story was actually about, but I have only seen, like, I saw half the first season, and I assumed that Alex O'Loughlin and Scott Kahn were actually the lead, like the lead. You know how like a series has like one lead and then the secondary leads. I thought that that's because that's what they were being set up in the beginning, but that was 7 years ago, and all of these four actors have been the leads ever since. My brother, I should have asked my brother, he's a huge fan, he loves that show, and Chin Ho with Daniel Dae Kim is his favorite, so this is gonna make him really sad. But yeah, so basically what's happening is that Daniel Dae Kim and Grace Park were negotiating to be paid as much as Alex O'Loughlin and Scott Kahn, because they were reportedly being paid about 10 to 15% less. And they might also, this is not confirmed, but Lachlan and Kahn were also given a cut of, like, you know, the series profits. And we don't know if Park and Kim were being paid that as well. That's just speculation that factored into it as well. So they were unable to reach an equality agreement to be paid as much as their white co-stars, and so they decided to depart the project, which is obviously very upsetting for several reasons. First of all, because in Hollywood it's a common problem that not just women but also people of color are systematically not being paid as much as their white male leads or co-stars or co-workers in general, because it's not just actors. And it's sad that they couldn't make it work. It's sad that CBS clearly wasn't willing to not even like give them more, but just give them as much as the two other ones. So now they've left and the series is going to carry on for season 8 without those two characters, and their absence will be explained in the premiere episode. So we will see. I'm hoping that this becomes Hawaii Five-O's final season, because I think it's pretty atrocious that this is still happening and there's no reason. Like, I just brought up the fact that I thought the two guys were the main, because I thought, like, if they were the main characters and these were secondary characters, like, the pay discrepancy would sort of make sense on that level. But if they're all four of the mains, then it makes, like, there's zero justification for them doing this. And it's such a shame that that this had to happen, that they had to leave. But I'm glad they did leave. I'm glad they stuck to their principles.
Yeah, it is definitely bittersweet because, like you said, it's nice to see that they have stuck to their principles, but it's also just awful that the network didn't feel like they were worth the money to keep them. Yeah. I mean, we saw Emmy Rossum do this for Shameless. She demanded equal pay for, like, with regards to what William H. Macy was making, which makes sense because she has been carrying that show for the last few seasons. And Showtime did break down and concede and give her what she was asking for. And it's like, it's really like, in these cases, a lot of people like always say, oh, but like they're being so greedy. Like, but it's not really about the money. It's about the principle.
Mm. Yeah.
And you should know your value and you should be allowed to fight for that. So.
Yeah. And I know, because it is a double-edged sword, because I know that Daniel Day Kim released a statement where he kind of said that, as an Asian American actor, I know firsthand how difficult it is to find opportunities at all, let alone play a well-developed three-dimensional character like Chin Ho, and I will miss him sincerely. So it's also kind of an acknowledgement of this kind of role. And Hawaii Five-O, really, with its the diversity of its cast was, I mean, it's not like amazing or unique, but it was certainly very good, especially for a procedural like this. So it's a shame that they had to treat their like half the cast like secondary cast members, you know, compared to the white male lead. So it's just, oh, why couldn't they just have paid them the same? And again, like with William H. Macy, I feel like that's a great sort of comparison to this, because there is a lot of times when they pay actors, it's a question of who is known more, you know, who is worth more. So like for The 100, for example, like, I don't know this for sure, but I'm pretty sure that Henry and Cusick and Isaiah Washington are being paid a significant amount more money than the series like actual leads, which is obviously Eliza Taylor and Bob Morley and Lindsay Morgan and Maria Avogropoulos, like those, because they're not the same names, you know, and that's kind of like, that's how the business works. And unfortunately, a lot of times, not in this particular case, but in a lot of times, the established bigger names tend to be the white male actor, like no matter who's actually the lead character, the one who is valued the most by the networks tends to be the, you know. But the point is that I think this kind of them, Daniel Day Kim and Grace Park, sort of taking a stance against this and saying, actually, like, this show has been on for 7 years. There's no, like, we're all four of us are the leads. There is no actual reason to pay these two more than us. Fix it. And then the network says no. And then they walk. I like to think that her, and Emily Rossum as well, that the fact that actors are beginning to fight back is helping to spread awareness about that this is sort of systematically happening, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that, like, not even just with pay, you're starting to see actors really stand up for what they know is morally right, not necessarily what is easy. This is kind of like a little bit off topic, definitely not related to pay, but Michelle Rodriguez announced last week that she is perfectly fine with walking away from the Fast and Furious franchise that she's been a part of since the very beginning, because she really doesn't like the way that it's fleshed out its female characters. She doesn't like the fact that the movies don't like pass the Bechdel test, which some people think is like a little outdated. But like the point is like, even if that she just feels like she has, like, there's no character development for her character, who's been around for 8 movies. There was no character development for Jordana Brewster's character. She skipped out on this last one, but she had been a part of the franchise since the very beginning as well. There are not enough scenes with women together in them, and she just kind of has had enough. And I think that that's really, it's really brave of her to take a stance on that. And and I hope that, you know, the more people do this, the more Hollywood wakes up to the fact that things need to change, and change is not for the worse. And if they change for things like this, it's like it the change makes sense. Nobody's asking you to do anything ridiculous. This is like these are moral issues. And I think they're so important.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Well, maybe that should have been our in-depth discussion this week. We clearly have a lot of feelings. Here's something a little bit more potentially exciting. True Detective, which is an HBO anthology series, may be coming back for season 3. And if anybody tuned into season 2, which starred Vince Vaughn and Colin Farrell, then this might not seem very exciting on the surface. But what is exciting is that Academy Award winner Mahershala Ali is in talks, currently rumored to be potentially starring in the third season of the series. So that is exciting in and of itself, just because he's such a talented actor. And I know I'm not alone when I say I would probably tune into anything that he's down to sign on for, because I think he's brilliant. So it'll be interesting to see if this actually gets picked up off the ground. I know that series creator Nick Pizzolatto has said in the past that he wasn't really sure if he was going to continue on with the series even before the ratings dipped significantly between seasons 1 and 2, mostly because it takes him so long to come up with a story that he feels like will make sense for the series. Like, I guess it really drains him because he gets super involved in fleshing things out. So it is interesting to hear that they're already considering potentially coming up with a third season. There's no like release date set or anything like that. There are no, you know, details as to what season 3 could entail. So it's really anybody's guess, but it'll be exciting to see if this gets picked up off the ground and if Ali ends up actually starring in it. So
this would be a really good move for them if they're hoping to revive this franchise, because and with a new showrunner too. Like it's there's no indication that this is going to suck just because season 2 sucked. So I'm excited. I hope this works out.
Yeah. So we have one more story here. The American Idol saga continues, kind of. I think a couple of weeks ago we talked about how ABC was reviving American Idol, even though Fox made this big to-do about bidding the long-standing singing competition show farewell. There was a little bit of drama after Fox found out the show was getting revived, because they said that it was kind of like... it kind of like basically threw everything that they did to say goodbye to the show out the window. But looks like Fox is bouncing back. They've already got a rebound show in place or in the works. They're actually, according to Variety, developing a brand new singing competition from Israeli producer and distributor Armoza Formats. And this is the production house behind such series as Revenge of the Geeks, The Final Four, and The People's Choice. So they're very well versed in competition series. The new competition series, according to Variety, is described as, and I quote, a variation on a classic shiny floor singing competition, one in which the show's four finalists are selected in the premiere episode. New contestants then challenge the finalists each week to steal one of the four slots. The winner is named in the season finale. So it kind of sounds like the X Factor meets the first few rounds of The Voice, except without the spinny chairs.
Yeah, exactly.
To me. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what Fox does with this. I'm sure that they have ulterior motives. Like, I'm sure, like, you know, they're thinking, not ulterior motives, but I'm sure they're thinking, like, oh, this is going to bring in views, this is going to bring in money. But it does kind of feel like a direct reaction to what's going down over at ABC with Idol and stuff like that. So it sounds a little petty, but we'll see what happens when the series premieres. Date for this. Yeah.
Right.
I'm glad you agree, though, that it definitely sounds like a direct, like, clap back at ABC.
I mean, 100% it is. I mean, their Fox's is realized. Like, they canceled American Idol. They were like, we're done with this, la la la.
NBC and X Factor. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then ABC picks up American Idol, and they're suddenly like, oh, shit. Like, they can potentially, people will be excited for American Idol on Fox. They will tune in for the first season for sure, at least, right? So they, and The Voice is consistently doing very well. And Fox is like, well, you know, we made American Idol back in the day. We can make another hit and we can blow them all away, you know? But I don't think they can. Like, I read somewhere, like, there hasn't been a successful singing competition launch since The Voice, you know? And I mean, especially the way that they're presenting this, where it's literally the same thing, except the finalists are quote unquote picked, but then people come in to challenge them. Like, that's not going to be very exciting. Like, it's not going to be very different. So I have to confess, I have a deep hatred for singing competitions in general.
Yeah, I know you don't like these.
They are so cruel. And yeah. So,
do you like, know,
I hate the fake drama in them that they construct. And I have no interest in this. I just think we don't need any more.
I will tell you, though, that like out of all of the singing competitions, the nicest one that exists, and I'm not just saying this because I worked on the show for 2 seasons, but I really feel like The Voice is like the nicest one because everybody that goes on is like truly inherently talented, even if they don't get picked. Like, they know that they're there because they were handpicked by producers because they're really good. And a lot of the times these people come back and they get picked the second time they come back. So there is hope to, you know, make it past that first initial round. And I think the only problem with The Voice is that they haven't had a breakout star yet. But that really comes down to America and then what happens after. I guess you could say the same about Idol. But yeah, I mean, like, it is kind of nice to have a show like that because, like, it is more about, kind of, like, less about poking fun at somebody who can't sing, which is what Idol is known for, and more about celebrating the qualities, the strengths somebody does have and offering concrete criticism when it's necessary. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of that format.
That's good. So that brings us to the end of the news, and we're going to move on to TV show of the week. Do you have anything this week?
I don't really, but I just like to kind of like bounce off of our last like news story there. I did watch the first episode of that new show, Boy Band. Because I can't help myself. This is also a singing competition. It's kind of along the veins of the 2000s and making the band and all of these hopeful young strapping lads are auditioning for the chance to be, you know, kind of put in this man-made boy band, like, kind of like a One Direction situation or like an O-Town, if you will, if you're a little bit older. But it's pretty fun because the panel, the judges panel is comprised of Emma Bunton, aka Baby Spice, Nick Carter, and I think it's T-Pain. Yeah, so it's kind of funny because, like, Nick Carter, you know, he's like boy band royalty. And I really thought it was going to be a lot nicer, but he said some really mean things in the first episode, and that kind of made me cringe. But it's kind of like, I think it's, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to keep watching it, but for the first episode, it was pretty funny just to kind of watch and see kind of boy band hopefuls, because I feel like in general, like there really hasn't been like a true boy band, and sometimes I think about like the boy bands of the O's, and you're like, man, like that took a lot of coordination, you know, you had to sing but you also had to dance, you're like an NSYNC or like a Backstreet Boys, and like that doesn't really exist anymore with like One Direction or Five Sauce or anything like that. So yeah, if you like competition shows and stuff, maybe that's something that's for you, but I wouldn't like run out to watch it if that's not your jam, so to speak. But I thought I'd bring it up just because I did tune in, and
yeah. Well, that's good. I'm glad you did. I don't really have much. I only have the latest episode of Wynonna Earp, which was episode 4 of season 2, so we're coming along very nicely. I thought this might have been the season's best yet. I really enjoyed their, no spoilers, because I know that a couple of people are actually, I've broken them. They're watching it now. But I really appreciate with Wynonna Earp how the pacing is going this season, because there has been a couple of like set up to be potentially long-term issues. Like one of the characters is possessed and another character kind of got separated from the group, and I've been a little bit worried about how long we actually had to, because the thing about possession, like part possession of storylines, is you never really know like how much of, like how much can we trust a character, like a main character, in what they do and what they say, and how much are they, like how much are they sort of coercing the other characters, like the whatever is inside of them, the possession thing, which is also always a little bit uncomfortable. So I'm glad that is sort of, it's progressing in a very interesting way pretty quickly. And then the other one is just because I really, like, this is one of my favorite characters, and I was very sad to see him sort of separated from the group. And I was like, is this a sign that they don't really know what to do with him? But it's all, like, they're reunited now, and there's still an issue, but at least they're together. And I think that's good, because I think when shows start separating its characters too much. The Hundred. I don't like it. I think that there's no need to keep characters physically separated from each other to prolong like character-centric drama. So I appreciate that. That they're all sort of the gang's all back together now, and we got to hear Waverly sing, which was nice. I have a real issue when TV shows make their characters. We might have discussed this for Gilmore Girls season 7 too. Like whenever shows find a way to showcase an actor's singing talent by making a really bad reason for them to go up on stage and have to perform. You know, it's in a way, I feel like One Tree Hill kind of got around it because it literally became Haley's storyline. But the first time they did it too, I was just like, oh my God, I hate this. but they did it really well. And I didn't think it was uncomfortable or anything. And she's genuinely like just very, very good. This is your bathroom buddy from Comic-Con last year, by the way, Dominique.
I forgot about that. I mark all Comic Cons by awkward encounters with celebrities. I should remember mm-hmm. that one.
But the season is progressing very nicely. I feel like the storylines. I mean, it's not. I don't want to say anything bad about Winona Earp ever, but the story is not as tight as I feel like it could be, but like I don't care because I'm having a great time watching it. And I feel like that's like what matters, and it's the women are so fierce and amazing and stuff. So yeah. Winona Earp, by the way, on Twitter, they had like a thing because there've been some best fandom polls, and they were like, no offense, The 100, but Winona Earp has the best fandom of all time, and I was like, what? I felt so confused. I was like, what do I do? What do I believe? But no, it's The 100. Just so we're clear. Okay. So let's see. We're going to move on to listener feedback now. So we're going to start with tweets and let's just go back and forth. Do you want to get the first one from Marie?
Marie says, just started listening, but I'm seeing Hamilton in London and Harry Styles in Germany in March. I know all about ticket prices. Haha. So I feel this.
Oh my gosh.
Side note, I am like super jealous because I heard that in London they did this thing to prevent ticket scalpers for Hamilton. I feel like, correct me if I'm wrong, Marie, but I want to say I heard that they made an effort to prevent that, which is really nice because I feel like it really sucks that most of the tickets, like for San Francisco, got swallowed up by scalpers and then they were like uber expensive. So I am still not going to be in the room where it happens anytime soon, but there's always next year, maybe.
Yeah. Or you can just go to London.
Yeah, maybe I should just go to London. That'd be great. And then I'll make a little cheaper pit stop at, in Denmark.
Yay. Rachel says, after listening to your 150th episode, I just had to start watching Winona Earp. Yay!
And there's
one more fan,
converter.
Hopefully. Let us know what you think.
Ning says, finally finished watching Gilmore Girls and listening to all the specials. Thank you very much. Parks and Rec next, maybe. Ooh, we do love Parks and Rec.
That would be a fun show to discuss because it's like
so many shows that I want to do, though.
Yeah, I mean, let's be real. We want to do Merlin.
Well, yeah, we want to do Merlin.
We will do Merlin.
We want to do Roswell. I feel like we can't, but I would like to do Buffy.
Oh my God, yeah. One day.
One day, maybe. Maybe next year.
Yeah. Kathleen Anderson says, speaking of, loving my binge of Merlin, probably because it's exactly the same as BBC, Atlantis, and Robin Hood. Have you seen them? So yeah, Kathleen, you should have waited. No, I'm kidding. We don't know when we would do anything, but yeah, I mean, the people who did Merlin went on to do Atlantis, so it's definitely similar to that one. I never actually got around to watching it because I was so devastated. I was so sad that Merlin ended because I loved the show so much. So I didn't watch Atlantis.
I watched the pilot and it was too soon. There was too much Merlin and Arthur in the main guy and Pythagoras, which is the only other one I can remember because he's like an actual historical figure.
The theorem.
Yeah, exactly. There was too much there was too much Merlin and Arthur in that relationship, and I just I couldn't bring myself to watch more, but I'm glad that you like it because I might come back to it later. Yeah. I love Robin Hood, but I've only seen the first three seasons because there's something that happens in the third season I couldn't believe that they did.
Yeah,
and then I couldn't bring myself to watch anything else.
Yeah, that's why I haven't watched it actually.
Anyway, no spoilers, but I'm sure Kathleen and anybody else that has seen BBC's Robin Hood will know what I'm talking about. But yeah, I just like, I could not believe that they did that. And then I was like, screw this. And I stopped watching. So if you have watched the whole series, let me know if it's worth it for me to like go back and watch the rest of it. Because I just couldn't bring myself to do it. Mm. Laura says, hi, ladies. So I love the majority of the cast, Neil and Allison for him, but your mother, I know the ending is not the best for those actors. Is the series worth the watch? Laura, I would say yes, because despite the ending, I still love How I Met Your Mother. But I'm not sure if you would agree. Selena, would you agree?
I would agree. Okay. I would say yes. I think, and this is funny, Merrima isn't here, so I feel like I can admit this freely, that I did not hate the ending of How I Met Your Mother. Like, I think as the and I don't want to say too much because I know that if you're going to watch it, Laura, but I feel like the final season was a disappointment overall, but I feel like the ending, and I've written an article about this too, that as much as you might think, oh, whatever, blah, 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 I think that the ending justified a lot of what had happened in the series previously. I think if it had ended any other way, there would have been a lot of stuff throughout the series that I would have had more of an issue with, and that I did have an issue with while I was watching it. I was like, why do they keep going back to this thing if it's gonna go another way? And so I think that for me, the ending did a lot to justify the series overall, which is actually a reason that I would say you should watch it. I do think that there comes a point around season 5 where it's just not that funny anymore. Like the first, I think the first season is bad, and then I think the second to fifth season are amazing and so funny and so invigorating. Like, it's such a fun way of doing a sitcom that is kind of like a mystery. It's kind of like the Lost of sitcoms, you know, and with the flashbacks and stuff. And I really genuinely think it's a very, very, very good show. And then once you get to season 5, you might start to find that the jokes kind of repeat themselves and they kind of start eating their own tail to an excessive degree that I don't particularly enjoy. But I mean, for sure, it's a fun experience. And if you like Neil and Allison, I mean, you're already... And I mean, let's be real. Like, Kobe Smulders is the true star of that
show.
Gonna
She's love
hilarious.
Her. Yeah, you're going to love everybody.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's so funny you mentioned that because I have rewatched How I Met Your Mother twice since it ended. And because it's just so easy to binge and kind of like Gilmore Girls, very comforting to have on in the background. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I feel like any reservations I had with the way it ended have like kind of fizzled out. I don't have any like regrets. I don't hold any remorse over what transpires.
Yeah.
So, and I think that like having experienced
it. I think they were building
it,
to that ending for the whole show.
Yeah, I think it honestly, like, if you ever go back and rewatch it, but like, you don't need to because you've already kind of put the pieces together. I think it works. It works just fine. And even if you just didn't like the last episode, it really shouldn't tarnish the rest of the series because it's just so great. And like, it's so funny because like, as I get older, I feel like a lot of the stuff that seemed very far-fetched is also like, even though it's dramatized a bit for the sitcom purposes, it is like very realistic to how like friendships are and like the people you meet and the people you date and stuff like that. So it's a wonderful show.
Robin Scherbatsky will be your new favorite character. So
Everybody's great. And Marshall's great. Everybody's great.
Everybody's great.
Laura also says, I know you all don't watch, but Pretty Little Liars had such a strong series finale, and that is how you create a long game series. Massive props. Laura, I don't watch, but I feel like I know everything about Pretty Little Liars because I cover this show so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was an interesting way to end the series, for sure.
Yeah. I used to watch it, but I got tired of it. I feel like that's the story that I give a lot. I've noticed that I'm like, yeah, I watched the first two seasons and I zoned out. But yeah, no, I'm glad. I'm really glad that you feel that way. I feel like the finale was mostly well received, and that's always it's always good to hear. And finally, Paley Lewis says, has anyone watched Skam, the must-see Norwegian teen drama? I've just finished season two and I love it. So to my great shame, that's the name, I have not. And it's terrible because I should. It's like repping my part of the world. And I know it's a very, very good inclusive show. And I'm going to get around to. It's one of those shows that I feel a lot of pressure to watch. So I've been putting it off, you know?
Yeah. Everybody keeps telling me that I would love it. But I haven't had time to watch it. Although I hear, didn't they just announce that they're not coming back? Like that's the end or something?
Or am I have no idea. I know there's going to be an American. There's going to be an American and a Danish version.
That's too many versions officially.
But you know what? The good thing is about them making more versions is that this is actually one of the only shows. I know that Quantico is another, but this is one of the only shows that actually has a Muslim girl on television. That it's openly displaying her faith and stuff. And I feel like we need a lot more of that. So I'm actually like kind of glad that they're duplicating the show with other actors and in other cultures. Cause I think that is like kind of a very, very good thing, you know, a kind of diversity that sadly we don't, even in Denmark, which has like a huge Muslim population, they are so conspicuously absent from our media. So I'm very, very happy that Skam is sort of making its way across the world and spreading some of that inclusivity that we are shamefully lacking over here.
But I do see all you Skam fans on my feeds, like my various social media feeds, like with your altar love and all that stuff. So I think we're all aware of the existence of the series. But
yeah, if it comes to a point where we really like struggle to find like TV to talk about, then TV to talk about, CW, then we should just like decide to watch an episode of something every week and talk about it, and that could be
Skam. Oh, that would actually be really fun. Maybe we should think about doing that.
Okay, so moving on now, we have a couple of emails. I'm just going to get the first one because it's the least long. The other one is like a novel.
Okay. No, it's fine.
And I didn't want to cut it down because she made some good points. So I'm going to get the first one by Ashley Barnes. She says, I also watched Anne with an E, having never read or watched any Anne of Green Gables things, and I loved it. I thought the relationships were so realistic. I thought the way she acted made total sense with her background. They aren't shying away from her having to have experienced things way above her age and what that would do to a child. Also, the episode where she got her period was amazing and totally captured all the feelings I had when I got my first period, lol. I have always hated Funkos, but my favorite character is Goofy, and I collect all things Goofy, which is hard since no one likes him anymore. Heartbreak. But then I saw that they are coming out with two Goofy Funkos because of Kingdom Hearts, so I might have to break my no Funkos rule. I'm usually a huge reader, but since I moved away from New York City a couple of years ago, I have struggled to find time to read since my subway commutes were my sacred reading times. So I just started listening to audiobooks, starting with Harry Potter since it's something I already knew, and I completely suggest them because their narrator is amazing. But anyway, all that to say, I'm going to try it for The Raven Boys because I'm really interested in listening to your thoughts on the book. So I'll let you guys know if that works out. Okay, that's it. Thanks, guys. Ashley, quick point. Do not get the audiobooks for The Raven Boys. Like, that's the one audiobook you do not get because the narrator is so terrible. I feel like I've talked about this on the show before. I genuinely think it bears repeating. Get any other book. Get some like autobiographies by like Amy Poehler or like Tina Fey or something, or Mindy Kaling, or get
actually, you know what? Autobiographies are like the best books to get in audiobook.
An audiobook, because they read them themselves.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. It's so much fun.
It's really great. Was it Lauren Graham's From Gilmore Girls to Gilmore Girls, something about talking? Like, that one is really, really good. And but seriously though, like, The Raven Boys narrator, because I have the audiobook and I had to turn it off, and I love audiobooks. So I'm also interested which narrator she's talking about for Harry Potter.
Yeah, Stephen Fry or Jim Dale.
I'm a Stephen Fry girl.
And I'm a Jim Dale girl.
Oh, no.
But, you know, at least we stick with our respective nations.
So. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, let us know which narrator you've got, because this is a topic of much debate.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have another email here from Martina, who says, "Hey, this was supposed to be a quick and short reply to two things you mentioned on the last episode, but here we are. Apparently, I had a lot of feelings." That's okay, Martina. We have a lot of feelings, too. So on Dracula, can everyone please just leave Dracula alone? There are already so many bad adaptations of the story that completely miss the point of the book. I recently took a class on Gothic fiction. We talked about Dracula quite a bit. The book is basically an exploration of sexuality, desire, and gender roles within Victorian society. So you can understand why the vast majority of my classmates and I weren't exactly thrilled at the news of a Moffat adaptation. The central three characters in Dracula can be twisted to line up with the dynamic of Sherlock, Watson, and Mary from the TV series pretty well. Dracula and Jonathan's relationship will undoubtedly be queer-baited, as there are some gay vibes in the book already. I can honestly say I've never dreaded a new show more than this one.
Oh, that no. Actually, yeah, that's what I was caused fearing. Concern. Yeah.
Okay, minor spoilers for Supergirl Season 2. Season 2 of Supergirl has been a mess. Worrying for Season 3, there is a direct correlation between when Ali Adler steps back from the series and when it descends into chaos roughly around the mid-season point. While I have a lot of issues with Season 2, I recently realized that the majority of them are caused by the character of Mon-El. Specifically, how the focus on him as a character has thrown off the balance of the ensemble cast. The other characters, including Kara, are sidelined because of him and act, to me, out of character to prop up the Kara-Mon-El relationship that became the focus of the entire show. Mon-El basically became the co-lead of the series. The writers tried incredibly hard to make the audience invested in the Mon-El care. Is it Kara or Kara?
It's Kara.
Kara, that's what I thought.
Right?
I think so. Yeah.
Kara. Now I'm second guessing myself. It is Kara. Okay. Right?
I think
Kara,
so.
Kara? I don't know.
Relationship, but ironically ended up shipping Kara with, well, we're going to go with Kara.
Yeah.
With basically everyone except for the one person on the show that they wanted me to. I love the character of Kara Danvers so much this season. She has become the love interest in her own show, and it is infuriating. Mm-hmm. Instead of having Mon-El serve as Kara's character development for the majority of the season, Kara was tasked with making Mon-El a decent person. The main character is regressed to prop up her love interest. This happened to the other characters as well. There was a severe lack of Alex, Kara, and by extension, super family interactions this season. Those relationships should be the focus of the show. They are what made season one so enjoyable. Actually, like, side note, that really makes me sad that this is the case, because I loved, like, when I started getting back into season one, I loved all of those different dynamics, and I think that that's what made me keep watching the series. So that's really unfortunate. Anyway, let's get back to Martina's email here. They dropped the supportive and sweet interracial relationship between Kara and James for a Kara-Mon-El relationship, which was deeply unhealthy and unequal from the very beginning. Mon-El is the anti-Steve Trevor. He consistently belittles Kara and questions her. Quite a number of other conversations are basically Kara scolds Mon-El for not using his powers for good. Mon-El insults Kara. They both get angry. They both apologize. No one really learns anything. Rinse and repeat. They broke up once after Kara fell. Flat out states that she deserves better, but then they get back together literally the next day without addressing or fixing any of their issues. Mon-El is objectively a pretty shitty person. He reluctantly becomes a hero-ish because he falls in love with Kara, not because they share the same values or need to do good. The entire basis of the relationship stems from the fact that Mon-El is also an alien who lost his home. They have very little else in common. Mon-El is so possessive, condescending, and doesn't really believe in Kara's abilities. Which he says to her face before she has to fight the big bad of the season. He also owned slaves on his home planet. Pretty swell guy. The fandom also became pretty toxic this season as well. The shipper wars were reminiscent of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fandom wars regarding Ward during seasons 2 and 3. All in all, I was pretty done with the show, and then they announced that Katie McGraw was promoted to the main cast for season 3. So I will still be watching because I love Lena Luthor almost as much as Kara does. Well, that is reason enough for us, Martina.
That is such a good breakdown. I feel like Martina basically said everything I said last week, but like so much better. you know, because she like broke it down so meticulously. Yeah. And I think she is absolutely right. And I feel like a little bit bad about going so hard on it, because I know that there are people who like Supergirl and who actually like Mon-El and ship him and Kara. And I think like, fair enough. Like, I'm not gonna be like, oh, that's a bad thing. Like, you can ship whatever the hell you want. Like, I don't care. But I think that, like, I agree with Martina completely in her assessment of Mon-El and what he has done to the show. He is toxic for the show. He is ruining, like, they are shoehorning in a white male lead, really aggressively male in all of the ways that have no place on the show, like Supergirl. It's bizarre. Like, it is the antithesis of what Supergirl is supposed to be. And it's so unfortunate. And everything she said with James is true, too. I think that is, like, atrocious on its own. And I know a lot of people are now shipping Kara and Lena Luthor. And I think, and partly because they have a lot of chemistry, but also partly because they're like, well, that would certainly make the show stand out and be special and be great. In a way that it's just not. And it's so bizarre. Like, I have a lot of, like, I stand up for the CW a lot, I feel like. I like the CW, I like a lot of what it's doing, but in this instance, I feel like, I don't know if it's the network or if it's who made this decision, but whoever made this decision does not want what's best for Supergirl and does not want what's best for the fans and is trying to turn the show into something that it never should have been. And it's so sad to see this happen to a show like Supergirl, which could be so empowering and which was so empowering before it moved networks. So yeah, I guess
that's a very good point.
Yeah. It's just a weird situation. I would actually really, really like to hear if we have any fans who are fans of Supergirl still and who don't mind Mon-El as much, because I really don't want this to just become us like harping on him and on this ship, because I know that's not fair, and it's definitely not fair if you're listening to this and you have a totally different take on it.
Right.
It's just my experience of the show has been, I mean, I share Martina's frustrations completely.
But yeah, like right in. I mean, our listener feedback segment is so that we can bounce off all of these ideas and kind of talk about them. So it's okay to agree or disagree, but we love to hear from you guys either way.
Yeah, for sure. And with that, thank you so much to everyone who wrote in and shared their thoughts on this week's episode. We hope that to hear from you next week as well. You can send us an email like Ashley and Martina did, which is hype@hypeable.com. You can leave a comment on Hypeable on the podcast post for 151. It's this one. And you can find us on Twitter @HypeableHype. You can find us on Instagram @HypeableHype. And you can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. You can also check us out on Patreon, which is patreon.com/hypepodcast. This week's bonus... last week's bonus discussion, I believe, is available for everybody. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is available for everybody, because we talked about the 20th anniversary of Harry Potter, and Harry Potter's supposed to be an inclusive experience, so we didn't want to leave anyone out in the cold. Looking at you, cursed child. Yeah.
So even if you're not a Patreon subscriber, you can actually go on to patreon.com/hypepodcast and listen to our... It was really great. It was me, Pam, and Merima. We all sort of shared our memories of getting into Harry Potter, our thoughts about the series, how we feel about it now, and how sort of all the media surrounding it has changed our experiences of the story. And it was a really good discussion, and we hope that you will all go and listen to it for free, no matter if you're a subscriber or not. And this week's subscriber special is going to be about the Batgirl rumored shortlist. So the list of actresses that has been rumored to be in contention, along with the one that new writer Lilani and myself believe should actually be playing Batgirl. So we'll get into that in our bonus discussion, which you can find on patreon.com/hypepodcast. Until next week, thank you so much for listening. Have a great week, everyone, and enjoy Spider-Man if you do go and see it. My name is Lena.
And my name is Pamela.
Bye.